This is the Real Ass Podcast. Here's your host, Luis J. Gomez.
And we are rolling. Mr. Anthony Cumia.
Ah.
Luis J. Gomez.
How are you, my friend?
Very well, very well.
I do appreciate you taking the time to do this, not only to do the interview, but to invite me in your lovely studio.
Please, it's your studio today.
Yes, of course.
The graphic. That thing is awesome.
Yes, thank you very much. That was hand-drawn by Howard Porter, DC comic book artist.
Oh.
Yeah, big comedy fan, big podcasting fan.
Jesus.
Yeah, met him through...
Fucking awesome.
Yeah, met him through Robert Kelly. He's the man. I obviously just, before we even get going, just want to say thanks for the time. And this is another Real Ass Podcast exclusive.
It's Real Ass.
Yeah. And yes, that is an acronym for rape. Did I do it on purpose? No. But once I found out that it was an acronym for rape, I was like, I'm going to keep that. That makes sense with the theme and vibe of our shows. We are starting a little bit later because apparently there was a suicide.
Someone decided to throw themselves in front of a train, take the... people say it's the easy way out, but that's got to be pretty rough.
Is that a rough way to do it? The train?
I think that's rough.
Well, yeah, I mean, because I've seen the videos where the guys get caught in between the subway and the platform.
Yeah, some people live through it.
Yeah.
And then what?
Yeah.
Oh, now your life is just as bad as it was, and you're all kinds of fucked.
Yeah, well, now, yeah, it's a whole bunch of worse, actually.
Yeah, fuck that.
You got,
I don't know.
Now, that's actually a great question to start off with. If you were going to off yourself, Anthony, how would you do it? It's not going to be jumping in front of a train.
Well, I think everybody would expect probably a gun, but I don't know. I think my old take on it is take whatever it is that's making your life so fucked up.
Yeah.
And do something that will probably get you killed to remedy it. But if it does remedy it, then you don't have to kill yourself anymore. So you're broke, you got no money and stuff. Start robbing banks.
Yes.
And never give up. Like, just fucking go out, blaze of glory.
I was thinking that. Why would anybody be homeless when you could just walk into...
Just walk into a bank and rob the fucking thing.
Yeah.
If you make it, great. If you don't, now you're fucking, you're in prison. But
you go to jail, but that's okay. I don't know that prison's that. I mean, I think it's bad, but I don't think it's any worse than living on the streets of New York City in the winter.
I don't think so either. Let me, you're talking to someone that was in the joint. So I have kind of a take on my take on prison is after a while, it just becomes your life. I don't think people really are freaked out after the initial being convicted and you're put in prison. Maybe it'd take years or something, but if someone's in there for life, it's like, oh no, let them rot in prison instead of the death penalty or something. It's like, no, once you're in there for a few years, you wake up, you're like, oh, I'm still me.
Yeah.
This is my life now. I got to deal with this shit, but it just, you laugh, you read, you fucking make jokes with people, you get ass raped. I think it just becomes your life. So I don't think it's as bad as a lot of people want to think it is.
Well, I think look, your best day is still going to be your best day. You can have good days, you can have bad days, it's just...
Make friendships, you fucking watch TV, you do whatever it is. Like, it's not, people think of it in the context of their lives and all of a sudden rip them out of their lives and throw them in prison. But if you're in there for years and years and years, after a while, it's your life. It's what it is. It's like someone going into the army. They have their life, their home with their parents or whatever. And then all of a sudden their life is completely fucking changed.
Yeah.
But it's not like horrible. It's what it is now. It's just what the fuck it is.
Now, obviously, we can't get too much into pending litigation, as they say.
Pending litigations.
Obviously, that's a story for you to tell on your own show another time in the future. But is that something you thought about? Because you did see it on the other side. You were arrested recently. You spent a little bit of time in the clink, just a couple days or whatever it was.
Yeah, it was 24 hours.
Not that bad.
Not
that
bad.
It's worse. But
it's short enough to just chalk it up to an experience. It was an experience.
Is it something that, I mean, you've been so vocal on your show, you're very pro cop, very anti criminal, as everyone should be.
Sure.
But is it something that you were kind of being on that side of it? Did it kind of make you step back a little bit and kind of rethink or reassess any of the things you've said or thought in the past?
No, not really. I look at it like, obviously mistakes are made in not only people's lives but in the judicial system. there are people that go away and, you know, didn't do it. We see that a lot. They see a lot of DNA getting people off the hook and stuff. But no, there's a lot of excuses out there and a lot of people doing bad things. And, you know, there's a society we're in. There's a system in place for it. And that's what happens. My situation, I'd like to think at the end of this whole thing, there's some exoneration that'll go on. So, you know, like I said, I can't really talk about the ins and outs of the whole thing, but I look at what I went through a little different than I look at, you know, somebody beating someone over the head and stealing their money, or some guy going up and I don't know, robbing a bank, like we were saying, shit like that, dealing drugs to kids, shit like that. You know, it does happen. It's not going to make me look at them any more sympathetically because I've been run through the system. It gave me a little more insight on the molasses slow process that the whole thing is.
Yeah.
And the fact that it does take some money and shit to get the best defense that you possibly can. And I know there are people that don't have that kind of money. But that goes with everything. Yeah. You know? People that drive shitty cars because they can't afford those either.
It's funny though, because when you can afford a lot, it's night and day difference, because I've been on both sides. I've been arrested a handful of times for smoking weed and stupid shit like that. And, you know, dumb hopping a turnstile when I was 19.
Yeah.
You know, they take you in for the night, 24 hours.
Yeah.
But when you have a lawyer, I mean, it is like night and day difference, because I mean, they basically, you're taking money out of the system if you're using a public defender.
Yeah.
So they treat you like you are the absolute very bottom.
And the public defenders aren't really there for, you know, hey, I'm really pulling for this guy.
Right.
You're just another one of the little minion out there.
Have you thought about, like, you know, obviously, you know, we're all hoping that, you know, the truth comes out and yada, yada, yada. Yeah. But have you ever thought about that? Like, what if you had to go away for a while?
Oh, Jesus.
Like a while, like a year or two. What I mean, how is that something that would absolutely terrify you? Even just being there for 24 hours, is that something that you kind of go like, damn, man?
That 24 would be... hours in a lockup is nothing like fucking 2 years in a state institution or something.
That's not life. It's not like where you're going like, oh, I'm getting used to it. I think for 2 years you are counting down the days.
Yeah, I think the most of it would be just the lack of freedom, people constantly telling you what to do. You know, and everyone always thinks of the, oh, well, there's gonna be ass rape in the shower and shit. I don't know. Every fucking person I've talked to that's gotten out of prison never even saw or heard of that shit.
Well, they're not bragging. They're not bragging about it.
So, yeah, that's what I'm thinking. So, I mean, God forbid anything would happen to me. I definitely don't see that happening this round.
You would join the White Brotherhood within 3 minutes.
Yeah. Aryan Brotherhood. Just hope it doesn't end like it did in American History X.
I'd like to see you join the Latin Kings. You just pretending to be Puerto Rican.
Do that. Apparently, I'd have to get some tats. This would be my first tats. I don't have any, so yeah. It could be scary.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about like losing your freedom. I mean, it's funny because we choose to do, you know, I started doing stand-up comedy a while ago, now I'm podcasting radio. Mm-hmm. You know, you've been your boss, your own boss, for a really, really long time, and there's something obviously very, you know, appealing about that, and there, it takes a certain type of person that, you know, puts in all the hard work in the beginning, because there's really not much payoff in the very beginning in careers like this.
Yeah.
And I think that might be the hardest part of all of it, is like just kind of losing that sense of like, I'm my own boss.
Yeah, in your life, you know, that's not even just at your job. In your life, you're your own boss, and then all of a sudden you're not. When you're put in a cell of any kind and the door shuts and it's locked and you realize you just cannot go anywhere, that's it. Like, that's a situation you're not really... I mean, think about when you're growing up and you're in school. You could literally run out of the room. You'll probably get in trouble. You know, they'll run to Y, maybe send you to fucking counselor or something. But you just get up out of your desk and leave. If you're at work, you just get up and walk out the fucking door. I quit, whatever. That's a situation where when they close the door, it's like, no, you can't leave. And that is the end of the story. So I couldn't imagine that whole thing being in place for a couple of years. That could get a little nerve-wracking.
Well, you start to feel like an animal. You start to feel like you're not a man. I mean, that's the one thing that we have.
Yeah. There's no way you can now leave this place that you've been put in. That would be pretty fucking intense.
I was talking to you before we went on about a video that somebody sent me. It looks like he was just messing around, but it was a big black guy, and it was a Kumia. Are we going to see you on the inside, Andy? Calling Andy Kumia, which is just funny to me. You get a lot of shit for being quote unquote racist. That's a thing that comes up all the time.
Yeah.
It's come up in my life. I've had, I got into an argument with somebody on Twitter a week or two ago, where this girl posted this thing. She was like, I'm getting sick of seeing, white comics going on supposedly racist people's proven racist people's platforms, blah, blah, blah. Somebody else wrote underneath it, it sounds like you're talking about Anthony Cumia. Then she wrote, oh, that's exactly who I'm talking about. And then I chimed in and I was like, well, I'm Puerto Rican. That was my first initial thing was like, I'm not white, I'm Puerto Rican. And then she was like, well, that's a shame. That's a shame that you'd be, you'd be willing to go and do that. And, I find myself having to defend my relationship with you to a lot of people that don't know you, a lot of people that just they see the Gawker articles or the blogs that were, what's funny is they're taking jokes out of context.
Yeah, it's easy to do. It's
very easy just to, I had a person.
In print, it looks terrible.
Looks so bad. I had a person on Twitter hit me up and they were like, oh, we transcribe podcasts. Would you like us to do that for your podcast, Legion? I was like, no. Are you out of your mind? if you just read out of context any of these jokes that we made.
They look terrible.
It's like hate speech.
Oh, shit.
How do you answer? When people say Anthony Cumia is racist, what is your initial gut reaction right there? What do you feel?
Now, I feel like, oh, really? Haha, I get it.
Right.
Because it's become so widespread and widely used, that word, for nothing more sometimes than disagreeing with a person of color.
Right.
And that's that makes you a racist now. So now it's become a joke. Everyone's a fucking racist that doesn't agree with the person that's calling you a racist. Right. That should say something right there.
Right.
As to how much credence I put in being called that. I've been very open and honest about talking about race over the years with a lot of people on a lot of different platforms, both black and white. It's a discussion. And we constantly hear how it's a discussion that we need to face and have in this country in order to move along. But then the second you want to bring it up in real terms, you're dubbed a racist. So it's not even worth it. But you got to take it from where it's coming from. The people that call other people racists, look who they are. Look at what their agenda is. Their agenda is to call you a racist. I mean, Donald Trump now, of course, he's the top racist in the country now, running for fucking...
No matter how many blacks, Jews, and Hispanics he's employed, no matter how many relationships he's had with them.
I've never heard a story of a person of color being turned down for anything due to their race from Donald Trump. I've just never heard about any... That's why when you're called a racist, I would love for somebody to point out how I'm a racist. When they go, oh, he's a racist. Give me examples, and not examples of me exercising my First Amendment. Don't give me that. Like, I'm able to talk about race, right?
Right.
I'm able to quote statistics that people don't really like, and that makes me a racist. Have I ever done anything that would hold down a race of people? I don't even know what that would be.
Yeah.
But I assure you, I have not done that. Now, at this point in our history here, just conversing about race and doing it in a way that they disagree with on the other side, the left, makes you a racist.
Yeah, and I've noticed that as well. And
there are some real racists, I think, just rolling over in their graves. The guy Wait, he said Obama wasn't a good president and you called him a racist? I've lynched people. You motherfuckers. Don't take that word and waste it like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not what it, it's way over the top to call someone a racist for just talking about race.
Well, and it also seems like, you know, if you're not just a part of the liberal leftist narrative, and if you speak out against it at all, and that's whether you're white, black, or Hispanic. I mean, black guys are being called Uncle Toms.
Uncle Toms all the time.
You know, I've been told, like, oh, you're not really Hispanic. That's what I'm told all the time. Because
Puerto Rican.
We have these honest conversations where, you know, yeah, I mean, when you do... When you kind of look at things from an honest standpoint and you're not just pushing a specific agenda and you're just looking at the pure numbers, you know, it doesn't make blacks and Hispanics look great, you know?
No, of course not.
And
but there's an issue that I guess has to be addressed within the communities, and it's just not being addressed. So when white people bring it up, first of all, it's none of your business. Secondly, why do you even care? Well, I think people just care as Americans that the country run as best as it can and that inner cities aren't war zones, perhaps, things like that. But, you know, because of the white privilege, you're just not allowed to bring that up.
Yeah.
And when you do, you're a racist.
How much does that bug you, that term, white privilege?
It's another hilarious term that's used that just means nothing. It doesn't mean anything. It's, again, being able to, the people that are saying, please, please don't judge us as this one group. There's a disproportionate amount of crime in the black community, let's say. So you would just assume that all black people are criminals? No, that wasn't even the point of saying that. That there's a disproportionate number of crime, amount of crime. But how come I am just off limits to saying that, which I agree, you shouldn't just lump an entire group because of whatever the stats are. But then whites are like, oh, white privilege. Well, that blankets everybody.
Yeah.
Well, why? Well, because. And you're like, wait, fuck it.
Because you've never walked out your door and had to deal with systematic oppression. Well, you don't know me. You don't know my life. You don't know the circumstances in which I grew up. You know, and I think that you're completely right. I think that when you really look at it and you look at it from an honest standpoint, there's so much more racism and divisiveness coming from the left right now that I think those people are creating the monster that is Donald Trump and it's like almost like a defensiveness for your race. And it's weird because I think white people were afraid for a long time. They were just kind of like, well, you know, we don't want to sound racist. And now, because it's become so extreme on both sides, white people are like, well, no, screw this. No, I have pride in who I am. And I'm not going to be told that I'm inherently privileged or inherently racist or inherently anything. Do you feel defensive over your race?
No, not defensive. Oddly enough, I don't really think about it that much.
Yeah.
I laugh at a lot of the criticisms that come in because they're so utterly ridiculous. And yeah, I think you're right. As far as white people, they're starting to just say, really? Really? Privilege? Racist? This? What's the common practice when a guy is accused of cheating when he hasn't been cheating and he keeps getting accused by his chick of cheating? What will he do? He will cheat because it's like, if I'm going to be accused of it, I might as well do it. So now when you're being accused of being a racist so much, all it does is build up this animosity and anger that wasn't even there before you were called a racist. So it's almost this weird vicious cycle that happens.
It's like when your back's against the wall, you want to swing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to get out. You got to get out of that corner.
Let me tell you, when I was fired because I got hit in the head by a black woman in Times Square and spoke out about it. When I was fired for that, it did not make me sit and ponder and think of how I could better treat people in various communities, ethnic communities of color. And it made me pissed.
Yeah.
It made me say, wow, we really are instantly assumed to be racist. That's part of the white privilege, by the way, is this immediate assumption that you're racist if you say something that people don't agree with in racial conversations. So if you want to lump in the we don't get followed around in stores while we're shopping, how about you add in the instantly assumed to be racist?
Yeah.
How about you do that? How about you add in easiest targets on the street if you want to fucking rob somebody? That's another privilege. Easiest people to just randomly punch in the face.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned doing the radio, and, you know, it's so funny because you've been doing it. How long have you been doing radio for?
Shit, I guess since 94.
Okay, so is it there? 20, 30?
A couple of years.
Yeah, something like that. I'm not good with math. But it's so funny because you started off at a time where, I mean, there was barely any internet. Internet really popped a couple of years after that.
Yep.
That's when people started having it in their homes. And I think there was a lot of freedom back then to kind of experiment and grow and to figure out, you know, your voice and your funny.
Yeah.
Now, everything is time-stamped. Everything is on the internet. Everybody can pull a clip. They can pull a video clip. We mentioned Gawker before and taking things out of context. How much do you think that this is now hurting comedy and radio and just this industry? Because I feel I'm afraid. I'm afraid to say faggot. I can't tweet it.
There's no one can dispute that the climate of political correctness that we have in this country now has undermined comedy. It's just fucking undermined it. Every comic is afraid. And, well, they should be. You're going to lose your fucking gig. You're going to have people in the industry that you want looking at you, not even looking at you anymore because you said or did this, or, you know, you were on stage one night and someone picked up their phone and taped you as you were just going off, you know? If a comic can't blurt shit out without a filter, you know, you're taking away part of their talent.
Yeah. And when people describe Lenny Bruce, they were like, oh, he's like a jazz musician. His mind was on autopilot. Yeah. And, you know, he would just go. Mm. And that's what was beautiful about Lenny Bruce. That's what people loved about him. And he was a guy who went to jail for his words. You know what I'm saying? It seemed so ass backwards when I started comedy. Somebody went to jail for their words. And now you go like, oh, we're moving back toward that.
Yeah.
We're almost moving back toward where if you say certain things, people will come after you. They will try to take your job away.
Yeah.
They will, you know, and to not have the freedom to kind of figure it out. And that's what it is, because, you know, as a young comic, you don't know what the hell you're doing yet. You're just trying to figure it out. You're just trying to find a voice. And I feel like now comedy is just getting extremely safe. And it's just like everybody is just, you know, it's kind of cookie cutter. And it's like, okay, well, that's kind of amusing. Yeah. But there's no brilliant, you know, I don't know if we can get another Louis C.K. or another Patrice without the ability for these guys to go out and try new shit that might piss people off.
Without being fucking petrified that their career is going to end right there with one word. I think any comic will say, if they're on stage or whatever you're doing in entertainment, comedy entertainment, and you have a spontaneous moment, something quick and funny that comes out of you and just makes people fucking crack up laughing, that is more satisfying than anything you've written and you know, rehearsed and practiced and tried out.
Well, that's real comedy.
It's that real, right.
It's falling off a ladder. You're not going to, you know, that just happens.
And that's the fucking shit that's being left out now, because right before a comic says it, they might think,
And once people are afraid to climb that ladder, like, I don't want to fall.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And once you take a second to go like, should I say that? The moment's gone. It's done. It's over. So this political correctness is really just destroying that natural flow of comedy. Any writer can sit there and write out a great act, and it'll fucking kill, and it'll be great. But he can also sit there and go, yeah, I better not say that. I'll change that joke around. And still, it's going to be hilarious, but it takes away that spontaneity. And maybe that spontaneous moment will spur something where he'll go home and be like, oh, that worked really well. I'll write something else based on that. It's all gone. The experimentation on stage is fucking gone. And especially in radio. Holy fuck, radio's done.
Yeah.
You can't. First of all, the companies, when I first got into it, it was there were quite a few mom and pop radio stations, they call them. They weren't owned by giant companies, corporations. So they knew their talent. They knew what they did. They didn't scream and bitch that much about, you know, whoa, our sponsors are this. And you were smart enough to know what you should or shouldn't do as far as ruining their company. But now it's all companies and corporations. So you say something, they get this image in their head that the diaper division is going to lose dollars because someone in their radio division said this, and the protests will go corporate wide. And they're like, what? So they're worried about that. And then you got a CEO that doesn't even know he owns a radio company that just goes, oh, there was a problem in division F256. Yeah, get rid of everybody that was in there. So there's no room anymore for experimenting and kind of support, people that'll support you, a general manager, a program director, things like that. It's just gone.
And, you know, obviously you're mentioning SiriusXM. We all know what happened with SiriusXM. After you lost your job, you started the Anthony Cumia Network, which has been a great platform for guys like myself, Legion of Skanks, Davey Mack, and Pat Dixon, all the Gavin. I mean, what do you talk to me just a little bit about kind of the future of the Cumia Network and kind of where you see it going? Because obviously the technology is just constantly changing. I mean, three years ago, people weren't really doing video podcasts.
No, it was all, you know, audio to iTunes, and that was it.
Yeah.
Maybe one show a week kind of a thing. There was definitely an opportunity to put on a show or a bunch of shows on a weekly basis with different day parts and days of the week that shows are on, and build from there. I really wasn't thinking about that when I first started this up, because it was pretty much like, hey, I still want to work, and no one's hiring me.
In that moment, when you said you got fired from SiriusXM, you know, you were out at the compound, you and Keith had a conversation and said, hey, dude, I'm going to do this. Was it any part of it like, fuck you, let me just show you that I don't need anybody else, I'm just going to do this on my own? Or was it something more or less you were like, maybe something that was more or less, hey, dude, this is probably better for me and this is a business decision. Mm-hmm. But how much of it was like just like out of pure like anger? Because I like that's when I first heard about you doing it, I was like, you know what, good. I was like, good for Anthony.
Yeah. I think a lot of people thought that, but it's hard to say fuck you when no one's there. Like, I was complete damaged goods at that point. Very difficult to go get fired from satellite radio for shit you said, not even on the air. And then have other guys go, yeah, we want this guy. In this day and age, you're not going to get anybody that's going to support the outcast anymore.
Right.
Used to be great. You get fired, you know. Howard gets fired from NBC, and he fucking ends up Infinity Broadcasting, making tons of cash. He got fired from DC 101. He ended up in NBC. Like, it always got better when you got fired.
Yeah.
Now you get fired, you're fucking scarlet letter, and they throw you away. So the fuck you factor wasn't really there, no. It was, I needed a lifeboat at that point. I could have honestly picked up stakes and fucking gone somewhere and literally retired. Just fucking, I'm done, I'll, you know, shoot guns, ride horses, dune buggies, whatever the fuck.
Kill Indians.
Southwest somewhere. I could have done that. I didn't want to. I love doing this. It's fun. It's an outlet. And to be able to do it now without any FCC or without some fucking CEO that doesn't even know you're there, but pawing over everything you're saying, it's great. So it kind of grew very quickly, too. Where me and Keith would talk about it and be like, you know, we could add other shows and move it to the city. So, you know, we have more availability to people. And yeah, that's where we're going. And that's the direction of this whole thing, is to keep adding shows and make it, you know, a very big, viable alternative to your conventional entertainment.
Now, let me ask you, just because obviously, you know, you have the stigma about being racist. Now, you have the new stigma attached to you with the recent legal troubles. You know, how do you kind of shake that? How do you kind of get people to go, hey, dude, you know, this is, because it doesn't, it does, it's like, it reminds me of the Duke lacrosse team. No matter how, they're exonerated. We all know they didn't rape that chick.
You're like, hey, the rapist.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's a constant joke. You know, if you make a joke about, you know, date rape, you always throw a lacrosse team reference in.
Of course.
You know, and people don't even know that the girl who accused them, she's in prison right now for murdering her boyfriend.
Yeah.
She's a psycho.
She was a fucking psychopath.
But how do you shake it?
Unfortunately, there's really no way to shake it. You just have to keep going. You know, I'll keep doing this. Again, it doesn't matter what the courts say. When all said and done, it's still there. It's still going to be there on Google. People are still going to be like, oh, yeah, why don't you go fucking... And I just have to, I have to deal with it. It's an unfortunate byproduct of all the information that we have available to us now. You know, it's like, oh wow, it's great. I'm able to figure out who that guy was in that movie in 2 seconds. Oh, that's good. What's the downside to that? Oh well, you'll just be fucking branded with horrible things forever and ever on this same database that you figured out that it was Fred McMurray in that movie.
We have to wrap up here in just a couple minutes, but what about the fans? Because that's the one thing that I noticed coming onto the network, and there's all these really passionate fans.
Yeah.
But then there's a whole sect of really fair weather fans who you know, when the going gets tough, you know, they're right on the other side. And I remember when I first came onto your network, I made a couple jokes about Opie. Took a couple knocks at him.
Yeah.
Because I knew it was a nice, easy way to get a lot of these fans to be like, oh, Lewis is a real ass dude, you know? But then the second I said something that they didn't like, then they're like, I hope Lewis dies in a fucking fire and his kid grows up without a father. You know, does it bother you at all? Some of the fans that were like there with you for so long and then just out of nowhere, they're like, all right, well, you know what? Fuck. Oh, I mean, they're saying fuck Jim now. Jim was never. They all love Jim. How does that make you feel when you get some of these guys?
I don't even know how that whole thing works. With that, like, yeah, back and forth, fair weather, hardcore fan, this, that. I don't know what the motivation is, really, sometimes. If you don't agree with anything that anyone says on this platform, you know, it's a subscriber-based thing. So you just don't pay, you don't listen. That's how it works. So I don't really get it. But again, a byproduct of kind of the conveniences that we get from this. It's always the conveniences first, and then the pains in the ass part come later with anything. You know, oh, easy pass. I'm going through the tolls without paying. This is great. Or without stopping. This is great. Oh, wait. They fucking knew I was driving to my mistress's house for my easy pass.
I just got a ticket in the mail.
Yeah.
I didn't even get stopped.
I got a ticket. So it's convenience first, and then the shit hits you later.
Yeah.
I think it's the same thing with this. We're like, oh, the miracle of the internet. It's fucking great. And then it's like, oh, wait, what do I have to deal with?
Yeah.
And the best way is to, you know, keep fucking moving forward. It's not, if you're in a very small world and you look into it and whatever subject's going on here, it seems like crucial and it's imperative and it's happening and oh my God. But then if you look at everything and realize how kind of tiny that is, it doesn't make that big an impact. So you got to kind of put everything in context and in perspective. And, you know, people are going to fucking love you and people are going to fucking hate you. That's the reality of this whole fucking thing.
Yeah. Mm. Last thing I'll ask you, just, you know, as a fan, you know, I've been very open about this. I didn't really listen to Opie and Anthony growing up. I was a Howard Stern guy every day with my mom in the car. But since I started working with you, I've gone back and I've listened to probably, you know, 100 hours of old O&A stuff. Just great, you know, stuff with Patrice, just classic bits.
Yeah.
And it's great. It really is great. Yeah. You know, and obviously I don't think you, Opie, or Jim would ever deny the fact that you guys had something that was pretty amazing and special. Would you ever be open to doing something with those two guys again? You know, whatever platform, whatever it is, would you ever consider that if the opportunity came up?
Oh yeah. I've seen enough in this fucking business to know that if you say that will never happen, it's more ridiculous, always more ridiculous than saying, yeah, that could happen. Like, if you say it'll never happen, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Say, yeah, that might happen. It at least holds some value.
Yeah, I would. If it was the right circumstance. Now, what would that would be, and if it would ever come be available to us, who knows? But yeah, I would be open to doing anything with anybody. It's part of this whole thing.
Insert tranny jokes here.
Yeah. Tranthony.
All right, Ant, dude. Thank you so much,
no
man.
No problem. Great.
Thank you.
Oh, no problem.
Fuck you! That's all, folks.